Greetings, and welcome to Research on Religion, a weekly podcast series devoted to the social scientific study of religion. I'm Anthony Gill, your host, professor of political science at the University of Washington, and distinguished senior fellow at Baylor University's Institute for Studies of Religion, the gracious sponsor of our podcast. We encourage you to visit our website at www.researchonreligion.org to post comments, ask questions, access additional material related to today's program, and to find out what is happening at the Institute. All right, let's begin.
On my honor, I will do my best to do my duty to God and my country, to obey the Scout Law, to help other people at all times, and to keep myself physically strong, mentally awake, and morally straight. Those words, which make up the Scout Oath for the Boy Scouts of America, are recited by roughly 2.7 million youth between the ages of 11 and 18 on a weekly basis. Since its founding in 1910, the Boy Scouts, along with the affiliated venturing and Cub Scouting organizations, have become the nation's largest youth organization. The goal of the BSA is to encourage young men to live up to the standards of the oath that I just recited, and to promote character development along the 12 points of the Scout Law: trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. But to what extent do the Boy Scouts succeed in meeting these high standards? Surprisingly, there have been very few studies, until now, that have examined this question systematically. In just the past month, Baylor University's Institute for Studies of Religion released the results from its extensive survey of over 2,500 individuals, some of whom have been affiliated at one time or another with scouting. The title of their report is called Eagle Scouts: Merit Beyond the Badge, and a link to that document can be found on our website or by going directly to Baylor's ISR at www.isreligion.org. The primary focus of that study was to see if Eagle Scouts, the highest rank one can achieve in scouting, exhibited the qualities mentioned above at a higher rate than either the general population or individuals who were scouts but never made it to the rank of eagle. I'm joined by one of the authors of that study, Professor Sungjun Jang, an associate professor of sociology at Baylor University and a faculty fellow in Baylor's Institute for Studies of Religion, which, by the way, sponsors this podcast. Professor Jang's primary areas of research involve studying how family relations, schooling, peer groups, and religiosity affect one's propensity to engage in crime, juvenile delinquency, and drug use. As always, we will link to our guest biography and his writings on our website. And I also encourage you to visit Baylor's ISR site and peruse the many other informative research reports that they make available to the general public free of charge. It's a great think tank, and I'm really proud to be affiliated with them. But now, let's talk about scouting. Sungjun, welcome to Research on Religion.
Well, thank you for having me.
Let me go ahead and start with a personal question, if I may. I know that you grew up in South Korea, but scouting is not just an American thing, but is actually a global organization. Were you ever affiliated with scouting, which I believe in your home country is known as the Korean Scout Association?
No, actually, I never got involved in Boy Scout when I was in Korea, even though I knew that there was such organization.
Do you have any sons or any other relatives who are involved in scouting?
Well, I have three sons, and unfortunately, I have to say that all of them are Boy Scout dropouts.
Oh, well, okay. That happens. Again, as we'll find out later, you know, 4% actually make it to the rank of eagle. A lot of people, you know, along the way get on involved in other things. I know that
right. One
of the things that we talk about in our troop is that boys, by the time they get to age 16, if they haven't made significant progress in scouting, will get diverted by cars and girls and a bunch of other things. So that's always something that we're concerned about. And I guess that brings up something else, too. Since we're delving into our own personal backgrounds here, I should reveal that I am a former scout, although I never made it to the rank of eagle, which is one of my biggest regrets in life. I was very close, just three or four merit badges away and an eagle project away. Nonetheless, I was pretty active in the organization, serving as a staff member, including program director at a BSA summer camp in Dundee, Wisconsin, known as Camp Long Lake. And I was also active in the BSA's Honor Society, known as Order of the Arrow, gaining recognition as a Vigil member. That was one of my favorite activities in scouting. And I should note that I am an assistant scoutmaster in my son's troop, and my son is currently a first-class scout out here in Washington State. We just got back a week ago from doing a backpacking trip, which was really fun. And I should also let people know, before we get deep into our discussion on whether or not the Boy Scouts are succeeding in their mission of building character, that at the end of this interview with Professor Jang, I'm going to be engaging in a bit of a reunion with one of my old friends whom I worked with while I was at Camp Long Lake, and who is himself a distinguished Eagle Scout, so he can give some additional insights to your study from the ground level of being an Eagle Scout, so stay tuned for that. Okay, so let's get down to business and talk about this study that Baylor University's ISR conducted. How did you get involved in studying the Boy Scouts?
Well, initially the Boy Scouts of America approached the John Templeton Foundation seeking funding in support of their study of Eagle Scouts, looking forward to 100th anniversary of Eagle Scouts. And at the time, the John Templeton Foundation recommended and suggested the Boy Scouts of America to contact the Baylor Institute for Studies of Religion for possible collaboration. So Boy Scouts of America contacted Institute for Studies of Religion, and we wrote a research proposal which later got funded by John Templeton Foundation.
And it's interesting to make this linkage. Now, we are a podcast on religion, and so some people might say, well, why are you talking about scouts? Well, as I mentioned or recited the scout law, one of the last character points that they mentioned is a scout is reverent, and they also owe an allegiance to God. So it's not surprising that they would pick Baylor's Institute for Studies of Religion. Not only are they interested in that aspect, religiosity, but, you know, you guys down there at Baylor are experts on a lot of stuff dealing with youth, either juvenile delinquency or staying out of juvenile delinquency. And it's really really neat to see that the Boy Scouts of America are interested in enough in seeing whether or not they're succeeding that they went out and commissioned this study. So I think that's actually very cool.
Yeah, that is true. And actually, Institute for Studies of Religion have several major programs, and one of which is pro-social behaviors programs, mm-hmm. which in fact submitted the proposal and receive the funding.
Mm-hmm. Now, the primary focus of your study is specifically on Eagle Scouts, and I'm wondering if that's what the Boy Scouts asked you. They said, well, just focus on Eagle Scouts or just Scouts in general?
They initially asked us to focus on Eagle Scouts, but obviously it wouldn't make sense if we just give an exclusive focus on Eagles, ignoring non-Eagle Scouts when we compare those who got involved in Boy Scouting with non-Scout members, that is, those who never involved in Scouting. So we ended up examining Eagle Scouts in comparison with the non-Eagle Scouts as well as non-Scout members.
Okay. Yeah, that's an obvious comparison for, you know, people like me who made it to the rank of life just short of Eagle. One would have to wonder, too, did that experience from being a tenderfoot all the way up to life have any kind of formative development on me, any impact on my character? And I'll be interested to find that out. You're going to have to tell me because I don't know. But a lot of this is focused on Eagle and what it takes to become an Eagle Scout. If you could review for some of our listeners who are probably not familiar with the scouting organization, what does it take to become an Eagle Scout?
Over the years, the requirements for the Eagle Scout Award has changed to meet the needs of the era, but some of the core elements of the program have remained pretty much consistent as a requirement. A boy must demonstrate citizenship and caring for his community and others, leadership skills and outdoor skills that show his self-sufficiency and ability to overcome obstacles. Mm-hmm. Today, a boy must earn 21 merit badges, 12 of which are required, including first aid, citizenship, and camping, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And also another important thing to note is that beyond the merit badges, candidate must also plan and carry out quite extensive, in some cases, very ambitious service projects to benefit a community. And also they have to have a the troop leadership position. And later on, Eagle Scout candidate must undergo a rigorous board of review where his attitude and the practice of the ideals of scouting will be closely evaluated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have to admit that the you mentioned the Eagle Project. I remember going through when I was getting up to life, I had a few friends that were doing their Eagle Project, and one of the guys, I remember Mike Zingale, they had this project where he built a play set for his church entirely out of tires and different poles. He raised the money through car washes and stuff, and it was an astounding project to build an entire play set. It was a jungle gym kind of thing, and I looked at that and I said, man, I don't know if I ever could do something that ambitious. And you see a lot of the scouts in our troop, when they get up to that point, they're asked to make out a plan for the Eagle Scout project and to be able to carry it out in case that they weren't around. So they have to have a very specific plan for this. It's very menacing for them, but then they get through it. And then on the other side, they have this major project that they've achieved. And it really, you do see this change in mindset in the people who've gone through that process. And again, that's one of my biggest regrets, that I was never able to do that.
Yeah, and especially the one story that I came to know about was really impressive, about the 16-year-old scout and who worked with not only scout members but also fellow students at school and teachers to build a small computer network at a primary school in Kenya.
Wow!
So this service project, you know, became international, which was really impressive. And basically, as a result of the service project, the primary school that had no internet connection to get connected to outside world came to learn so many things that are going on outside of their small tribal community.
Yeah. No, it's amazing to do something in Kenya all the way from the United States. It's just, you know, it is amazing what, when given a challenge, what some of these young men can actually do. So scouting, I mean, on the face of it, it seems like this fantastic organization that could promote things, but we're going to take a look at some of the empirical evidence here. Just out of curiosity, are there any famous former Eagle Scouts that are out there? I mean, are these folks just kind of everyday common citizens, or do they sometimes grow up to be important folks in our world?
Well, probably the famous Eagle Scouts include 38th President of the United States, Gerald Ford, and also the former U.S. Secretary of Education, William Bennett, and the mayor of the New York City, Michael Bloomberg. And also we have the J.W. Marriott Jr., who is the president of Marriott Corporation, and Donald Rumsfeld, the former U.S. United States Secretary of State, and also many award-winning director Steven Spielberg is also Eagle Scout. And also there are many astronauts, including the very first human to set foot on the moon, Neil Armstrong, mm-hmm. Is also Eagle Scout.
One thing that piqued my attention when you mentioned Marriott was that I remember, well, scouting tends to be associated a lot with church organizations and church groups. In fact, many scouts meet at churches, including our scout troop. But one thing that I've noticed, too, is that Mormons, the members of the Latter-day Saints, are very active in scouting. In fact, every Mormon stake that I know of usually has some kind of Boy Scout troop associated with it. And wherever we're out on outings, we're more than likely to run across a scouting organization that is affiliated with the Latter-day Saints, which is rather interesting.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, too, it's my understanding that although scouts strongly encourage religious participation, they're not particularly affiliated with any other, with any one particular denomination. They cross all different faiths. Is that correct?
Yes. The Boy Scouts of America is not affiliated with any particular denomination or religion. And in fact, about one-third of chartered organizations are non-religious organizations, such as a civic or educational organizations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is interesting. My scout troop that I initially belonged to when I was a young adult actually happened to meet in a public school. We didn't really have any strongly religious connection with it. Our the one that we are with today now is a little bit different than that. So let's go ahead and talk about the study and find out, hey, you know, sounds like the Scouts are doing great things. They're producing Neil Armstrongs and, you know, Gerald Fords and Marriotts. And wow, that's pretty great. But those just might be outliers here. Does this have an impact on people who don't land on the moon and take the first step there? Let's talk about your study. And first of all, tell us a little bit about the methodology of this study. How'd you go about picking your subjects to interview, and what type of questions were you asking them?
We basically wanted to study a nationally representative sample for which we work with the Gallup organization. And the Gallup conducted a series of sampling and until they actually asked particular questions that we had in our survey. The Gallup began with what they call the daily tracking, which is basically every night, almost every night, 350 days per year. They interview by telephone 1,000 American adults each night. So in that daily tracking survey, two questions were included, very simple, straightforward questions. The one was asking about whether the respondent had involved in Boy Scout ever. Mm-hmm. And if the answer was affirmative, then another, the second follow-up question asked about whether he achieved the rank of Eagle. Mm-hmm. So we used those two screening questions. And also at the time, they were asked whether they can be recontacted. So out of those people, about slightly more than 81,000 male adults living in America made a random sample. And of those, we randomly selected 2,512 adult males who initially agreed to participate in a follow-up survey, and they were recontacted, and then they completed the survey.
Now, that's pretty interesting, trying to find an Eagle Scout, knowing that only 4% of Scouts make it to that rank, and not all young men actually join Scouts. So, I mean, actually, you are looking for an eagle in a haystack, I guess. It's surprising that I would have thought that the Boy Scouts of America would have a database on who Eagle Scouts were and would have volunteered some of that information to you. Did they offer that at all, or did you ask them for that?
They did, and we thought about that option, but we thought that taking the random selection using the method the Gallup has been is more likely to generate more unbiased and random sample. So we decided to go with the Gallup sampling method.
That makes a lot of sense, because if you take the list from the Boy Scouts of America, either they're going to give you their best people to be shining as an organization, although I'm guessing that they're pretty honest in doing it because that's one of their character traits.
Right.
Or alternatively, the people who end up on the Eagle Scout rank list are ones who actually want to maintain constant contact with scouting. And that's going to be a much different person than an individual who, say, became an Eagle Scout and then, you know, they left scouting and they went on to do other things. So,
right.
You know, this Gallup survey, you're capturing a lot of these folks. And now you got about 2,500 or so people in the sample. Roughly how many of them were Eagle Scouts and how many were regular Scouts?
Out of 2,512, 134, which is about 5%,
okay,
were Eagle Scout, and 853, which is about 34% of the sample, were non-Eagle Scouts, and the remaining 60% were non-Scout respondents.
Mm-hmm. The report that you mentioned, or that we're talking about here, does a lot of survey results or questions that, you know, you're asking questions, how often do you go camping, or when's the last time you've gone camping? Very simple things that you would think of when you think of a random telephone survey, somebody calling you up and, you know, answer A, B, C, or D. Did you include any open-ended questions, or did you do any open-ended follow-up with any of the scouts, or is this primarily just a quantitative type questionnaire?
It was primarily a structured, closed-ended questions.
Mm-hmm.
Given the number of questions that we wanted to ask, and of course, given the time and space limitation, we could not include the open-ended in this survey.
Yeah, that's understandable. I try telling my students how expensive it is actually to do survey research, and they say, hey, just calling somebody on the telephone. I go, yeah, but not everybody answers, and you got to pay people to call people who hang up on others. So, you know, that's
right.
That's always difficult. Okay, well, let's get into the results. I'm anxious to see if Eagle Scouts live up to the standards that they set for themselves, and what about people like me that didn't quite make it to the Eagle rank, but nonetheless were involved pretty heavily in scouting. Now, your report, again, compares Eagle Scouts with Scouts who never attained Eagle and with individuals who never joined Scouting at all across a number of different dimensions. And the questions that you were interested in asking fall into a number of categories, including health and recreation, social networking, which you in the report call connections, community service and leadership, environmental stewardship, goal orientation, planning and preparedness, and then finally character. Let's go ahead and take each of those categories one at a time and start with health and recreation. What were your findings about Eagle Scouts compared to the general population when it comes to maintaining health and engaging in other recreational activities?
Yes. About the health and recreation, we basically ask about their habit of physical exercise, as well as participation, and especially regular participation in outdoor and indoor recreational activities. And also we included an item about drinking alcohol as well.
Mm-hmm.
In general, regarding the outdoor and indoor recreational activities, as we anticipated, given that those activities are the significant part of Boy Scouting activities, Eagle Scouts were found to be more likely to regularly participate in outdoor activities such as camping and fishing and so forth. For example, when you look at the camping, Eagle Scouts were found to be 95% more likely to say they regularly participate compared to non-Scout respondents. And when Eagle Scouts were compared to non-Eagle or regular Scouts, Eagle Scouts were still 40% more likely to say they regularly go camping.
Now, let me just ask you a quick statistical question. The question being that you're controlling for other factors here, like income and age and things like that, right?
Right.
Okay. That's always one of these questions that come up in the report. So, yeah, you know, one of the questions that I have, and I'll ask this in a little bit, but just to preface where we're going, is the question of self-selection bias that can come into this study, and that Eagle Scouts are people who like camping, and so they tend to be the ones who make it to Eagle Scout, not because Eagle Scout made them more interested in camping, but camping made them more interested in becoming an Eagle Scout. But actually, let's go ahead and address that question, because in terms of that issue there, to what extent can your survey somehow figure out what is going on here? And again, I'm going to use that example of camping, because you say, well, you know, if somebody goes through scouting and they make it to Eagle Scout, the process of going through that makes them more likely to camp. But alternatively, the other explanation could be that kids who really like camping, they did it when they were 5 or 6 with their parents, really want to go into scouting and just stick with it because they love it so much. And so you're seeing that not so much the effect of scouting on them, but rather their previous behavior. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that the self-selection bias is real and legitimate concern, which affects pretty much all scientific research like ours. And just to say upfront, the self-selection bias cannot be 100% controlled. And most researchers try to include some individual characteristics, or in many cases, what we call proxy measures. For example, you mentioned as an example, individual tendency to enjoy camping and outdoor activities, and which can be considered as one of such individual traits. Another possible individual trait that might have worked as a potential the bias factor is low self-control factor. Self-control factor is often viewed as individual personal trait. For example, those boys who have relatively low levels of self-control are less likely to participate in Boy Scouting. Even though Boy Scouting offers many fun activities, but it is also serious and highly structured, and certain requirements that you need to keep up with. So in that sense, low self-control might decrease the participation in Boy Scouting. And another variable that we can see is that physical well-being or physical exercise. Low self-control is likely to decrease the frequency of physical exercise or even doing exercise at all. So when you consider that individual trait, low self-control, they in fact may contribute to positive relationship between Boy Scout involvement and the physical exercise. So if you do not control for such individual trait, we would end up overestimating the relationship between Boy Scouting involvement and outcome measures such as a physical exercise or physical well-being. So even though it's not perfect way to measure and control, but we control for basic socio-demographic variables, including income and race and education, and also employment status and the marital status, because marital status might be to some extent a result of an individual's levels of self-control, and also religious participation, specifically religious service attendance, was also included as a way to address the self-selection bias issue.
Did you have any controls in there for parental involvement? Because as an assistant scoutmaster who is involved with my son in scouting, and I really enjoy it, you can see there's a big difference of the parents who get involved versus the parents who, you know, drop their kids off on a weeknight and say, do your scout meeting, and we'll see you in an hour and a half or so.
We consider that item, but as we were finalizing our survey, we did not include that item because we are surveying adults, and many of whom may not have accurate memory. If we were interviewing youth, then asking about the parental support or even pressure might have been a good question to ask. But because we are dealing with a sample of adults, we didn't feel that that was a good item to include.
Fair enough. The reason I bring that up, too, is not to critique this study, because it's an extremely well-done study, and I find the findings to be very interesting and compelling. We're going to talk about one of the interesting ones here in a second. But that all studies have their limits and such. And the reason I asked earlier, too, is if there were any open-ended questions, I was wondering if there was some opportunity to flesh some of this stuff out. But, it's a study that it's the first time that something like this is being done, and so you're getting some good results. I would just say, hey, if you're planning on doing more in-depth study with people in that, consider me as one of your research, either subjects or partners in helping out, because I find this topic to be fascinating. So I want to get back to health and recreation, because there was this really interesting finding in the study that surprised me a little bit. And it has some saliency to me because I'm one of these people who was a scout, very active in scouting, but never made it to the rank of Eagle. And that was largely on the issue of exercise, but also showed up in terms of drinking in this category. Eagle Scouts were not much different than the non-scout population in terms of exercise and drinking, but were much more oriented toward exercising and not drinking than scouts who didn't become Eagles. Now, this is fascinating to me because it would seem that the interpretation of this result is that scouts who didn't make it to Eagle are less likely to exercise than the general population. And the same thing with alcohol. They're more likely to drink than the general population. So, maybe only making it to first class or to star somehow turns you into a drunkard. It's kind of an interesting result. Did that surprise you? And did you have any thoughts on why that might be the case?
Yeah, that was an interesting finding to us as well. So we thought about what might have been going on, and probably the potential, the explanation or a way to look at this interesting finding is that regarding exercise, we specifically compare those three groups, Eagles and non-Eagle Scouts and non-Scouts, in terms of everyday physical exercise. So in other words, it is a particular type of or the level of involvement in physical exercise. That certainly does not explain why non-Eagle Scouts were less likely to engage in that level of physical exercise. But instead of looking at the frequency of exercise, we were comparing this particular level mm-hmm. of exercise.
Okay.
And the other thing about the alcohol use is that this alcohol use question was also not specifically the levels or the amount or frequency of alcohol use, but rather dichotomous, yes and no, drinking alcohol, or I didn't drink during the past week. So interpreting that results in terms of getting drunk is not a correct way of looking at it, because even when you have drinking wine, those respondents might have said, yes, I did, during the last week. And I think it has a lot to do with our limited measurement and without having specific follow-up questions.
I think that's fair, and it's a pretty fair explanation. We come across some of the limits of what we can do in terms of the resources with the funding. I was contemplating that over the past couple of days after I read your report, too. And there's something, it gets back a little bit to the self-selection bias that, again, there's a lot of kids who love camping and who are very disciplined are going to be the ones who are attracted to scouting. But there's also going to be a group of kids that get involved in scouting in the fifth and sixth grade where the age when a lot of these folks get funneled into troops, who are rather impulsive. They want to try everything. If there's a volleyball club at school, well, they want to do that. And if, one of their friends is doing scouting, okay, I'm going to go do that. And so they show up for scouting for 6 months or a year, but they don't really have the self-discipline because they're trying everything else and they tend to drop out. That's going to change the characteristic of the sample and the people that you're talking to. And so, one would almost wonder that in future studies of this, if at all possible, you got more funding from this, is to actually break it down to find out if people dropped out as at the scout rank, tenderfoot, second class, first class, and see to have a more nuanced tracking of how this influences people. You think that would be a good idea?
That will be really fascinating research, too.
Yeah. Well, again, I noticed that I was the first one here publicly to mention that. I'm sure you thought of that, but you know, if you need a researcher to help you out with that, I'm always available. So there you go. Hey, speaking of research and being connected with research, the next category that you talk about in the report is called connections. I would also term this social networking, which is kind of the more typical use of the term connections nowadays. What do you consider to be connections, and what did you find in terms with scouts, Eagle Scouts, and non-scouts?
By connections, we had a personal and social networks in mind. Or in sociology or in social sciences, we use the term social capital and how you are connected to other people or organizations. And that's what we were examining in terms of subjective closeness with family members, siblings, and also co-workers and friends and neighbors and so forth.
And so what'd you find out in terms of those connections and how Eagle Scouts were the same as or different than other people in the population?
And again, here, we generally found that the Eagle Scouts tend to report higher levels of close relationships with other people, including their siblings and their neighbors, religious community, and their co-workers. And that's what we found.
There was one other part in that category of connections that I found utterly fascinating, and that was the scouts or the Eagle Scouts or the person's spiritual connection with nature. And what did the Eagle Scout result look like in that, and what did that category all mean?
Now, in this question, we ask whether they agree with a statement that I find a spiritual presence in nature. We found significant differences, and specifically Eagle Scouts were more likely to agree with that statement, 44% more likely than non-Eagle Scouts, and slightly higher percentage, which is a 50% more likely to agree that they find a spiritual presence in nature than non-Scout respondents.
Now, I found that result to be absolutely intriguing, and this gets back a little bit to what we were talking about before in terms of self-selection bias. This is one of those things that I don't think is an effect of a self-selection bias, but that scouting actually does have a major impact on this, because again, you're talking kids who get involved in scouting are usually about 11 or 12 years old when they start out. And if anybody knows anything about 11 or 12-year-old, they're not thinking about spiritual connections in nature. They're saying, hey, can I have the pocket knife because I want to whittle something or throw it at a piece of wood? And you know, scout masters and senior patrol leaders are all trying to tell them not to do those kind of things.
Yeah.
But I have noticed through my own son, but also through a number of other scouts in our troop, is that as they get older, as they move into 13 and 14-year-olds, and they've been on a dozen, two dozen campouts, they really start to look around at their surroundings and go, wow, this is incredible. Yes, I would like to play Xbox and Halo and all that other kind of stuff, but I kind of actually like being out here and seeing the different rock formations and, oh, wow, isn't that lake really cool? I see that transformative behavior in a lot of these scouts. And so I would credit scouting to really having an impact on that relative to people either who drop out of scouting early or who never got involved in it at all.
Yeah, actually, this item was one of the several items that I really wanted to include in the survey, because that is my current interest, which I call either truth-seeking or spirituality. And this item about the spiritual presence in nature, and of course, the term spiritual can be understood in many different ways depending on who you talk to. But basically here the idea is that not necessarily a religious sense, but here the spiritual might refer to some kind of connection. So rather than looking at the nature and environment as a something that exist out there for you to take advantage of, but rather something that needs to be cared for, or something that is very, to some extent, mysterious, because the nature, the physical world has so many elements of wonder, and I believe the Boy Scouting activities are designed to enhance such appreciation of nature in youth or even in childhood. And in fact, right now, I and other colleagues are working on a paper that focuses on, in fact, the spirituality and religiosity in terms of how Boy Scouting activities contribute to the spiritual, in other words, the thinking about existential questions like the meaning and purpose in life. And we found very interesting and fascinating thing. Basically, those who were involved in Boy Scout are more likely to think about those existential questions, which tend to contribute to various pro-social outcomes. So even though it is limited in number, but I think this is one of the very important items in terms of identifying the specific contributions Boy Scout involvement tends to make in an individual's life.
Yeah, that didn't come out in the original report, so I'm going to have to look forward to that research paper. And when you get it finished, we might give you a call again and talk more about that.
Sure.
We were talking about spirituality and nature, and one of the other categories that you had was the issue of environmental stewardship. And I want to kind of skip up to that section now. And I know that part of the Boy Scout creed is to leave no trace, or even to leave an area cleaner than when you found it. In fact, my own troop and my son, we were just out camp out at Ancient Lakes, Washington last weekend. And our scouts backpacked out three full bags of trash that they collected from what others left behind, which is pretty amazing. They're carrying out garbage bags and doing it. They did it with no complaint either, which was just absolutely amazing to see. They said, yeah, we want to clean this place up. They love that area, Ancient Lakes. It's one of their favorite camping sites. And let's talk about environmental stewardship. How do Eagle Scouts fare with respect to keeping the world clean?
Well, the Eagle Scouts did really well, scored very well in terms of environmental stewardship. For example, we looked at this particular item, whether they were active in a group or organization that works to protect the environment. Now, it is one thing to recycle at your home.
Yeah, that's
easy.
But it
is another to be a member and being active in an organization that works to protect the environment. Mm-hmm. And in terms of that organizational support or participation, Eagle Scouts were found to be 89% more likely to be active in such group compared to non-Eagle Scouts, and 92% more likely to be active in such group compared to non-Scout respondents. So Eagle Scouts were found to be very active in participating and serving in an organization that works to protect the environment.
Now, you just mentioned serving and joining organizations that help to protect the environment, such as the Sierra Club or Ducks Unlimited, is something that Eagle Scouts tend to do a lot. What about other areas of service and leadership? That was another category that you looked at. I would expect Eagle Scouts to shine in this area in terms of service and leadership. How did you go about measuring service and leadership, and what did you find?
We, and again, in general, Eagle Scouts did very well in this category. Specifically, we looked at the donation, donating money to religious or non-religious organizations, and we also looked at the volunteering time to, again, both a religious and non-religious organization. And when we looked at those donation and volunteering items, Eagle Scouts were found to be more likely to donate or volunteer compared to especially non Scout members, as well as non-Eagle Scout members. And we also looked at whether they worked to solve community problems. So in other words, not just the thinking, talking about, but rather we wanted to know whether they have done anything specific to make their community better. Regarding that question, we found that Eagle Scouts were 68% more likely to participate in such effort compared to non-Eagle Scouts, and also 56% more likely than non-Scout respondents.
Wow. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. And again, that's one of those things that when we were talking about the self-selection bias earlier, yeah, maybe that's at work here. But again, you can see what the scouting organization does by giving young men a year after they've been in the troop a position of running a patrol and making decisions and participating in service projects where they go out to community organizations and say, hey, we're here to help. You can see that, again, that's very transformative in a lot of these kids. Because, you know, when a kid comes in when he's 11 or 12 years old, he's thinking, hey, man, I'm going to, you know, build campfires, go camping, and, you know, maybe throw rocks at squirrels. But it becomes something very different than that over time. In terms of service and leadership, too, one of the other aspects that you looked at that is related to that is goal orientation. And we mentioned earlier that the Eagle Service Project is a big deal. It's one of the things that most Eagle Scouts that I know of have mentioned that they're most proud of, you know, more so than any of the other merit badges they did. And it's also one of those things that oftentimes trips up a lot of people like myself, who was, you know, daunted by the fact that other scouts in my troop had done really amazing things, and I didn't think I was capable of that. I would imagine that Eagle Scouts are much more goal-oriented than non-scouts or scouts who didn't make Eagles. Is that correct?
That was correct. We looked at, again, the several items related to goal orientation, including lifetime learning. So in other words, we looked at the learning as a lifetime goal to see whether Eagle Scouts are more likely to have such attitude or goal orientation. And we found that Eagle Scouts were 42% more likely to say learning something new every day is extremely important compared to non-Eagle Scouts, and at the similar level, 40% more likely to say the same thing compared to non-Scouts. We also looked at several different types of goals, whether the survey respondents had set any goal and also achieved that goal during the last year. And we found that Eagle Scouts were more likely to not only set a goal, but also achieve that goal, whether we ask about the personal goal or professional goal or a spiritual goal or financial goal.
Uh-huh. Well, that's pretty cool. Well, along with goal seeking, you need to plan and be prepared, and that is the Scouts' motto, is to be prepared. And you had another category, again, dealing with planning and preparedness. What did you measure there, and how did Eagle Scouts fare on planning and preparedness? I would assume pretty good.
Now for the planning and preparedness, we specifically asked about whether they have any disaster supply kit kept in home or in the car, or whether they have any specific meeting place in case of emergency, and CPR certification as well. In every single item that we looked at, Eagle Scouts did much better compared to non-Eagle Scouts and non-Scout members. For example, whether a disaster supply kit is kept in home, Eagle Scouts said 94% more likely to say yes compared to non-Eagle Scouts, and 124% more likely to say yes compared to non-scout respondents.
Yeah, that's one thing I really pulled out of scouting. And again, I think this is something that the scouting organization provides as a value added to young men, is because, again, 11 and 12 year olds aren't thinking of this, but by the time they get to Eagle Scout, they've heard it so many times. I personally, even though I haven't made Eagle Scout, have, you know, emergency preparedness kits at home. My son has been involved in helping us put together. I mean, we're basically ready for the zombie apocalypse out by us. But I also have, you know, carry first aid kit in my car, usually carry a sleeping bag, which in one time we were in a dramatic auto accident, it actually came in handy in helping helping my son get through a period of shock, keeping him warm and that. So I always tell my students, you know, hey, out here in the Pacific Northwest, we're in earthquake, volcano zones, flooding, you know, you folks got to be prepared for this stuff. And they always kind of chuckle at me. So, you know, let them chuckle. I got my stuff in my car. The last one that you have, deals with the issue of character. And while everybody thinks of scouting as going camping and pioneering and making monkey bridges out of rope, the underlying thing of scouting that it really imbues into young men is the issue of character. Mm-hmm. That the goal is to have that 11-year-old who comes in starting the scout program be a much better person by the time that they leave. And I want to know, are the scouts, the Boy Scouts, achieving that? How did you measure that, and what did you find?
Our report included the items of what we call the personal accountability, such as whether they do their best. You know, for example, I believe the Cub Scouts' motto is "Do your best," to see whether after they become an adult, they still have such attitude and the character. And also whether they do always do what is right, or the work ethic for which we ask whether they work hard to get ahead. And not only such personal individual accountability or responsibility aspect of character, but also we ask about their beliefs in diversity, which is highly emphasized in contemporary society. And specifically, we ask about the religious tolerance or the religious diversity, whether they have basic respect for other people of different religious faith, whether they agree with it or not. So those items were what we examined. And across these items, we found that Eagle Scouts were likely to score higher than non-Eagle Scouts and non-Scouts both. For example, when we looked at whether they tried to exceed other people's expectations, Eagle Scouts were 45% more likely to say yes, and that's what they do, compared to non-Eagle Scouts, and 52% more likely compared to non-scout peers.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the other interesting findings, too, that you did, since we're a show that focuses on religion, is that issue of respect for religious diversity, mm-hmm. or the issue of religious tolerance. One of the things, again, I found rather interesting was that Eagle Scouts shined in that area. They, you know, showed a great deal of respect for others of different faiths, yet the non-scouts, or excuse me, I should say the scouts who did not make Eagle, scored significantly lower even than I think the general population. That again was surprising to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we perhaps to the extent that the self-selection bias was not fully controlled for, probably that particular observation might be explained by that. But that was really surprising and an interesting pattern.
Well, definitely is something for future research, and we hope that you continue along this line of research because it is fascinating. And if I could just ask you to step back from the specific numbers of the study itself, and as you mentioned, you weren't involved in scouting, your sons were involved for a little bit, but then you were asked to do this study by the Boy Scouts and Templeton Foundation, and what big ideas or things did you take away from doing this project that made you rethink anything, or what were the big lessons, I'm asking?
I think, personally, I regret that I didn't keep my boys in the Boy Scouts, and whether they worked all the way toward the Eagle rank or not. Because based on these empirical results, the involvement in Boy Scouting seems to be a really good thing to do. And Boy Scouts of America offers a really good pro-social, community-based voluntary program of youth development, which unfortunately is nowadays not really emphasized or even taught in school environment, especially the public school system, emphasizing character and various service activities. Not that the schools do not make any effort, but Boy Scout involvement is a very significant plus to what they are exposed to and what they are challenged to. And especially based on our research focusing on Eagle Scouts, now certainly we talked about and we suspect that there is some element of self-selection bias that was not fully controlled for, but at the same time, it will be really difficult to agree that all those differences that we have found can be explained away by individual differences, and especially individual differences found at a very young age. So, and I think even though we cannot pinpoint exactly what percent, what portion of the differences should be attributed to the boys' exposure to Boy Scouting activities, but in my mind, I have no doubt that there is a significant contribution made by Boy Scouting activities to the positive development of youth, and especially when you look at all these various aspects, Boy Scout involvement and Boy Scout related activities tend to train and raise the boys in many different ways, not just the physical aspect, mm-hmm. not just the social aspect, but also spiritual and mental and various aspects. So it is really good community organization which parents should consider having their children to get involved in, and especially once they get involved in, it will be desirable for them to go all the way through to get the most benefit from such participation.
Yeah, as a political scientist, too, I tend to think about things in terms of the policy world, and reading through your study, which, again, we'll link to on our website, or you can go directly to Baylor's Institute for Studies of Religion to find it, and I urge people to go and read it. One of the things that I kept thinking about, too, was how recently in the past two decades or so that the Boy Scouts of America have come under attack from secular pockets of society because of their religious affiliation, because of some of their policies that people disagree with. And they've been, in many ways, been pushed out of public schools and off of some public lands. There's been a number of different controversies that way. And I'm hoping that your study will get in the hands of a number of policymakers and will be discussed in very wide public circles so that people understand the very pro-social benefits that the Scouts have to offer to young men, and something that is of critical importance to our society today.
Yeah.
So,
and especially the items on tolerance and diversity was, to be honest, was very surprising to me as well. Because Boy Scout is typically portrayed and understood as, quote, conservative, unquote, organization. You know, conservatism or conservative attitudes, and often do not go together with the idea of tolerance diversity, but quite contrary, our findings show that the Boy Scout, and especially the Eagle Scouts, are very tolerant and much more than being tolerant, and in fact having respect for differences and diversity, which was really interesting finding.
I think that's a great point to leave off on. We are going to continue our podcast with an interview with one of my old friends from Camp Long Lake days and talk about his experience within scouting and maybe share a few reunion stories here. So I urge folks to stay on with us. But for right now, we're going to let Professor Zhang get off to doing his other research projects. So Sung Jun, I want to thank you for being on Research on Religion.
Well, my pleasure, and thanks again for having me on.
As noted at the beginning of our podcast, we have a special addendum to today's interview that comes in the form of a reunion. I am very pleased to have Gene Schoberg here to discuss his experience in scouting. Gene is an Eagle Scout, was in the Order of the Arrow, the Waggleshag Lodge, of which I also was a member, and he worked with me at Camp Long Lake for a number of years as the archery director. I consider him to be a very good friend, but as I moved to California, we lost track of one another. But thanks to the magic of Facebook, here we are talking to one another once again. Hey, Gene, welcome to Research on Religion.
How you doing, Tony?
I am doing great. I noticed something in the introduction that I gave you. You were archery director, but you did a whole mess more stuff when you were at Camp Long Lake, right?
Yeah, I started in the kitchen, and I moved my way up to program director.
You were program director at one point?
Yes, 1 year. Yeah, for 1 year.
Awesome. That was, because I did that for a year or two, and that was awesome. It's a fun job.
Yeah.
Dude.
It's a lot of fun.
All right. Well, we just talked with Professor Sung Jun Zhang about the Eagle Scout experience, and he gave us a pretty broad statistical perspective on scouting, but I wanted to talk with a person more on a detailed one-on-one basis to find out a little bit more about that experience, to bring it a little bit more to life. You're an Eagle Scout, and as I mentioned in the podcast, I never got there. So let's talk about your Eagle experience. What age did you earn your Eagle?
I went through my board of review just after my 17th birthday, and I went through the ceremony my senior year, September of my senior year, so I was 17.
That was pretty good, because if you just turned 17 and you did your board of review, that still gave you a year. I know a lot of people actually take all the time right up to, you know, 2 weeks before they turn 18, so you had some padding there.
I know several young men who have handed all their paperwork in the night before their 18th birthday.
Yeah, that's cutting it close, but that's how a lot of us operate, I guess. But you did it well in advance. Be prepared, as they say in scouting. What was the most difficult part of getting to Eagle?
Well, I think the most difficult part was just deciding that that's what I wanted to do. I mean, I was a pretty busy student. I shot competitive archery. I was in football, forensics, debate, band. Making it a priority, I had a busy life. Mm-hmm. Making it a priority was probably the most difficult thing.
And that's what
my folks helped me with that.
That's good. That's good having the folks there to push you along. I mean, it's about gaining independence, but you always do need some accountability person there by your side saying, hey, you know, you need to remember what you're doing here and what this could mean for you, because I know a lot of people like myself, I got distracted by so many other things, and it's those distractions that become the biggest obstacle to Eagle that I hear about and that I know that I experience too. Hey, is it an accomplishment that you remain proud of, something that you look back and you say, wow, I did that. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very proud of my Eagle. It helps me. There are things that I turn back to, and I remember I've done this before.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it at a relatively young age. And that experience reminds me that I can do it again.
Mm-hmm.
That's organization, leadership, things like that.
Yeah, and that's some of the things that Professor Zhang had brought up, that the leadership and, you know, organization, all those skills stay with you for the rest of your life. Now, one of the things that oftentimes acts as a stumbling block for a lot of people, and people say is one of the most difficult things of the Eagle process, is getting the Eagle project done. I have to ask, what was your Eagle project?
I dealt with several developmentally disabled youth,
mm-hmm.
and we took them virtually on a picnic. And my guys I had several volunteer scouts, and we did some cooking. Actually, we did some scout skills.
That's cool.
And I had several scout volunteers who had to be interviewed in order to be with these young men. I had to be interviewed. My adult advisors had to be interviewed. And then we, some of the developmentally disabled folks, they couldn't handle knives. So my scout volunteers had to peel the potatoes and cut the potatoes, but the special needs folks could add potatoes or stir the stew or things like that. So we tried to get them, we took them on a picnic, and they cooked for as much as they could, and it was a great activity.
Yeah, it's really neat, and it's not just going on a picnic. It's doing all the planning, like you said, and having to go through the interview and understand what you are doing, not just rushing out and say, we'll just throw a frisbee around, but understanding what this means to the kids and everything. So
on both sides, both the volunteers, them having to deal with certain developmentally disabled folks, and of course the folks that are developmentally disabled, they didn't get out much, so it was a taste of freedom, and they were exposed to some things that they usually weren't before.
Oh, very cool, very cool. I wish I had done a project like that and completed my Eagle, but they'll really look up to you for doing that. Hey, one of the things that you have to do to get Eagle, in addition to the project, is that you have to earn 21 merit badges, which I think about 12 of them are required. What was your favorite merit badge of? I'm sure you did more than 21, but of the potential 21 you needed to do, what was your favorite?
I tell you, I think Citizenship in the World was probably my favorite.
Really?
Even though it's a lot of book work, my counselor, who was my committee chairman at the time, he really made me work for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that challenge is why I look back at it with fond memories. He really made me do some research that for things that I had some understanding of, but the more I learned about the world, the more I wanted to learn about the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very cool. How old did you do that, the merit badge at?
I think I was 14.
14, okay. So about the middle of the whole process. Yeah, I just, I'm surprised that you chose that one. I thought, one, you're trying to appease me, because that's the kind of stuff that I teach now. But I just finished teaching a bunch of scouts that at the recent merit badge weekend that we had, and they had to go through several weekends. They had to do a couple different things with that, and it can be a challenging one, because some of the stuff in there, like define world citizenship, is kind of ambiguous, and I actually had problems defining it. So, but anyways, hey, you mentioned a board of review for your Eagle rank.
Sure.
And we go through boards of review, and as an assistant scoutmaster, I take, Tenderfoot and first class and second class scouts all through this process. We ask them questions about first aid, demonstrate you know how to stop bleeding, demonstrate that you know how to do this kind of lashing and that kind of lashing. But when it gets to the Eagle, the board of review, and it's actually board of reviews, plural, can be a little bit more daunting and intimidating. Tell us about that process.
Well, I think the board of review has changed a little bit over the years. I've recently sat on, within the last couple of years, I've sat on probably 10 Eagle boards of review with other young men. And it's kind of a celebration of their scouting experience. But sometimes you've got to get them where they understand, hey, you've done something neat. You've done something that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to ask them the questions. Sometimes it comes across as a job interview, but it's not supposed to be like that. It can mimic that a little bit, and young men are usually nervous going through it, but it's really a celebration of what they've done through those questions and getting them to realize, hey, you did it.
Yeah.
It was tough, but you did it.
I want to
celebration.
Yeah, it is a celebration, and it's something that you've accomplished over the course of six, seven years of your life, from age 10 or 11 up to 18. But it's supposed to also be something that sticks with you for the rest of your life. What things did you take away from being an Eagle or scouting in generally? What kind of lessons have carried with you? You already mentioned your, you know, organization and the, you know, can-do spirit, but what other lessons have you taken away?
Scouting is, I mean, we do values training.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of sneak it in on you because we're trying to sell fun to the young man.
Right. Yeah, camping. It's sold as, right. You know, camping. You can build a campfire. You get to carve with a knife. Like, what 11 and 12-year-old wouldn't want to do that?
Right. You know, so you're selling fun to the young man, but we talk about values education with the parents. And they just kind of sneak it in on you. We have the Scout Oath. We have the Scout Law. We have the Scout Motto, the Scout Slogan. We have good role models as Scout Masters and Assistant Scout Masters. And when you and I worked up at camp, we were constantly reminding each other of certain expectations that we were supposed to be acting, ways we were supposed to be acting.
I'm laughing inside right now. I can't laugh on the microphone, but yeah, that's actually true. And actually, you know, thinking back on the Camp Long Lake days, I mean, we were a wild, scruffy bunch, I think. But on the other hand, there were really some good, high character people that came through that camp that I, you know, look back with really fond memories of knowing.
Well, right. And that, you know, how many, and even the young men, the scouts, you see them make a mistake. Mm-hmm. Of some sort, and you don't go off. You take that young man aside, and you turn that into a life lesson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's. I mean, there's innumerable life lessons that have been pulled from camp.
Yeah. No, I know that for a fact because our troop, you know, having been in it for about a year now, I watched them. A lot of these kids develop in the course of a year, and. We just went on a camp out to Ancient Lakes in Washington here, and the way that they were able to set up, get stuff done, pick up the surrounding area to leave it better than when they left it without any complaints was astounding. I mean, I'm, you know, looking at this from an adult side now, I don't know if I remembered anything like that when I was scouting. Was that what we were doing? But, you know, from the adult side of the table now, I'm like, wow. This stuff is really seeping in, and it's not, you know, we're not telling them, you know, you must have this value, do it now, but you do it through example. Hey, you're still involved in scouting today, so what capacity are you still involved in?
I'm the district commissioner for the local district and council.
And you just doing that because scouting has been part of your life for so long, and it's just hard to get rid of, or?
I was asked to do that. I was voluntold. I mean, you know, I volunteered, but they needed it.
Okay.
So that I stepped in, and I also serve as a volunteer staff member on several little programs throughout the year,
mm-hmm.
A lot of camping programs, a lot of weekend camping programs.
So that means you get to see scouting up close today as compared to when we went through it in the 70s and 80s. Have there been any changes that you've noticed?
Oh, there's been some changes. I mean, right as you were leaving, we started educating our youth on how to protect themselves from adults who have ulterior motives,
mm-hmm.
who might use a youth organization to infiltrate a youth organization to find vulnerable youth. The Youth Protection Program started back in the 80s, and the Boy Scouts of America actually teaches our youth how to protect themselves
mm-hmm.
from people who would abuse them in that manner.
Right.
The demographics of the United States has changed. I mean, scouting takes some real investment. It takes some investment. You only get out of it what you put into it.
Mm-hmm.
But in scouting, I find the more I put in, I get out and exponentially more.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm on a different side now. I'm not a youth.
Right.
With single-parent homes, you know, everybody's stretched to the limit with the cash, and mm-hmm. it seems like families are going to the winds. They've got 20 million different things to do.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some competition there, and that's not bad, but we just need to market ourselves well and understand that, there's nothing wrong with playing soccer, but...
Well, I think there is something wrong with playing soccer. I'm a football guy, a real football guy, but I understand what you're saying. Yeah, you're right, because one of the challenges we face is that so many of our scouts are, you know, doing, you know, soccer, or they're doing this, that, the other thing. And, you know, as you get older and you're getting into high school, that always was a challenge, that distractions would come quick, you know, cars and girls back in our days. But now there's so many other different things. And it even creeps in pretty early with all these elite sport leagues and things like that that are competing for different people's time. But, yeah, the kids who see scouting as an all-around development thing really pick up on it, I think.
And, you know, I came from suburban scouting.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been hunting and fishing for years.
Mm-hmm.
And scouting to me was another opportunity to spend time outdoors. I think some of that's lost now. I don't think that's a priority with a lot of young men. You know, a lot of kids is spending time outdoors.
Yeah.
We lose those guys.
Yeah, no, that can happen. Hey, I got to ask, what were some of your best memories of scouting?
I one of these Cub family weekends that I work at, and the different activity groups come in and meal by meal, and they set up the dining hall, they set the tables. I pick out like a 7 or an 8 year old, and I put him in charge.
You put him in charge. A 7 or 8 year old, you put in charge.
I put in charge.
Okay.
There's parents there. There's 7 or 8 year olds, and I do little leadership lessons with them.
Mm-hmm.
I teach them chain of command. I'm in charge of the dining hall. They're in charge of setup. So if they have a question, who do they come to? They come to me. If your activity group has a question about setup, who are they supposed to come to?
Mm-hmm.
And they're supposed to come to you. That's good. All right. And okay, because we're dealing with food and silverware, what do we want to do before we handle any of that stuff? Good. We want to wash our hands.
Yeah, okay.
So his job is to get his whole crew, his activity group, into the bathrooms to wash their hands. So he's got his crew in. He's got them out. He's showed them how to set the tables. They're out working. And this gentleman comes in, and he's all fired up. He wants to show me and the rest of the camp that he's a leader. So he's a dad. He's got his son in tow. And he looks at me, because I'm in charge of the dining hall, and he says, what do we do? And I pointed to the scout, the 7-year-old. And he looks at the 7-year-old, and he said, and he looks up, and he points to another dad. And he says, him? I said, no, and I point to the scout, and I said, he's in charge. Ask him what you should do. And he looks at the scout again, and his head looks up, and he looks at another adult, and points at another adult. And he says, him. I said, no, him. He's in charge. And he physically shakes his head like in disbelief.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can kind of understand that from the side of a parent. You're going to let a 7-year-old run the food, yeah?
Right, okay. Right. Well, I mean, all they're doing is set up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And he reaches over to grab some silverware.
Uh-huh.
And just then, the young man comes, the 7-year-old comes around, puts his hands on the table, both hands on the table, kind of, you know, leans over the table a little bit, looks up and says, did you wash your hands? And the guy looked at both of his hands, and he looked at the scout and said, I guess that must be the young man in charge. Let's go wash our hands. And he grabbed his son, and he walked to the bathroom and washed his hands.
That's a great story. You had mentioned that to me earlier, and I'm glad that you told that, because from my reflection, too, as a parent doing this now, you know, I can put myself in the shoes of that older gentleman and say, you know, you what, seriously, you're putting a 7-year-old in charge? Do you know what happens when you put 7-year-olds in charge? But on the other hand, and this is the great lesson of scouting, is that you give people the authority, you give people a mission, you give them a task to accomplish, and they can accomplish some pretty amazing things, and that's pretty cool.
Sure, they get to practice. I mean, that 7-year-old gets to practice leadership under a controlled under a controlled environment. He's got a chain of command. Okay, he knows that if he's got a question, where to come. Okay, and then afterwards, after the whole exercise is done, I sit that young man down, and we do an evaluation. And of course, I've got his parents probably right over my shoulder, so that when that scout and that parent go home, the parent can reinforce the lessons that the young man has learned.
Yeah.
We all deal with the chain of command at work. Well, the sooner that young man deals with chain of command, he may understand the world a little better.
Yeah.
And they're just rudimentary. They're rudimentary lessons.
Yeah, but they could be big. They could be big life lessons.
If he gets it, they can be a big step.
Yeah.
And especially if they're reinforced at home. If the dad says, you know, leadership is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Leadership is hard, but you did it. And that could be transferred to anything.
Yeah.
This task was difficult, but you did it.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime somebody steps out of their comfort zone, then, yeah, it's difficult, but you did it.
Yeah. Do you have any best memory from Camp Long Lake working on staff?
They're all good memories.
Oh, that's good. I thought you were going to say Chuck and Bruno. For the listeners, both Gene and I did this skit called Chuck and Bruno's Camp for Wimps. It was kind of off the traditional scout skits that you normally see at campfires, and the kids loved it. And I thought that was always a blast doing that.
It was. It was, and it was never the same any single time.
Yeah.
It was just a skeleton skit.
Yeah, no, it was good. Again, looking back on that, you know, just seeing the people that we worked with, you know, such as, you know, Mike Garvey and Mike Urban and Andy Paradowski, who recently passed away, and that was really kind of a sad thing. But a lot of great, great, great individuals there. Even Ed Riedmeyer is cool. So I don't know if Ed's going to listen to this, but, you know, Ed is a great guy. We put up with a lot of joshing from us, but he's just a great man and probably a great leader somewhere out there today. So, hey, in closing here, because I don't want to take up too much of your time, you've been through this process. You've been through the Eagle process. You've been through it at the adult level and being a district commissioner and the whole shebang like that. Do you have any advice for the parents? Now, we don't have many 10 or 11 year old kids that listen to this program, and you know, so you can't tell them, hey, you know, go to camp because you get to, you know, throw knives and stuff like that. But if you had to talk to parents and give them some advice, what would you say to them?
I'd say, look at what's happening with pop culture. You know, how we glorify certain values on TV, movies, music, and if you want your son to succumb to some of those values,
mm-hmm.
Let him keep doing what you're doing. But scouting is an opportunity for you to have other adults reinforce that the values that you probably want in your son: trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. To be prepared, to do a good turn, even more than once a day, to do his best. And those are the values that we live by, or at least we try to live by. And those are powerful things. And those are powerful words.
Mm-hmm.
Even more powerful if you try to live them.
Indeed they are, and what a great way to finish off by reciting the Scout Law. So I won't make you sing the Camp Long Lake fight song or anything, but I do want to thank you for taking time out of your day today to talk with us, and it's good talking to you again. We got to stay in touch.
Back at you, Tony.
Thank you for listening to Research on Religion. To learn more about today's topic, participate in a discussion about what you've heard, or browse other podcasts, please visit our website at www.researchonreligion.org. And if you like what we're doing, please tell a friend. We'd appreciate the company. See you next week.